Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to My Favourite Work of Art, with me, Dr. Laura Jane Foley. Each week I'm joined in the studio by a guest who tells me all about an artwork that means something to them. Today my guest is Vicky Stone, an award-winning comedian, actress, composer and singer. As a classical musician, she was trained at Wells Cathedral School, the National Youth Music Theatre, Rose Bruford College and the Royal Academy of Music. She has appeared on many national radio and television programmes, as well as sold-out runs at the Edinburgh Festival and on UK tours. She is the presenter of the BBC Proms podcast and is the BBC Proms correspondent for BBC Radio 6 Music. She is also well known for her original comedy songs, including the viral comedy song Philip Schofield, which she performed on ITV's This Morning. In 2016, Vicky wrote Concerto for Comedian and Orchestra, which she performed at the Glastonbury Festival. I'm delighted she's joining me today. Welcome, Vicky.
Hello, Laura Jane.
So tell me, what is your favourite work of art?
Well, when you invited me on the podcast, I was trying to think about what my favourite work of art is. And certainly my favourite artist is Grayson Perry. And I tried to nail it down to one particular artwork, and I found that I couldn't, mainly because I think one of the things that I like so much about Grayson Perry and his work is his relationships between his television programmes for Channel 4 and the art that he makes for those programmes. And I think that the television programmes themselves are a work of art.
Okay.
So that's what we're talking about today.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. So he's recently had a series called Rites of Passage on Channel 4.
Yes.
So perhaps you can tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, one of the episodes was about marriage and what are normal rituals, about sort of the rituals behind marriage. And he's looking at different cultures and different types of religion and how marriage is presented in society and how things are passed through time. And then he helped devise a divorce ritual, which was really beautiful. I found myself in absolute floods of tears at the end of it. And he'd made an artwork which the divorcing couple were to cut in the middle, and then all their friends sewed it back together. It was really, really beautiful. And I think that the way that he looks, the way that he dissects culture, I think is really important. It makes for really, really amazing TV as well as brilliant art.
So was it the flag, a tapestry that was made? So
yes.
It was made to be split into two.
Yes.
But then, so what happened? They cut it up and then who brought it back together?
They sort of designed the ritual between themselves and Grayson Perry. So there isn't a divorce ritual. We don't have anything to go by. And they'd gathered all their friends to sort of witness their divorce. And yeah, and he'd made this tapestry. He bought the scissors along. They didn't know they were going to cut it in two. There was the two halves of each of their lives represented on either side of the tapestry. They cut it up. I thought it was going to end there, that they'd each take half of it away and keep.
Yeah.
But actually, to give their friends needles and threads to then thread the tapestry back together to make it into one. And it wasn't in a way to get them back together. It was just, you know, here's the two of you. You've still got all your friends.
Mm.
There's still something here, and we're acknowledging the end of it.
Absolutely, I suppose the act of having a ceremony anyway at the end of a relationship. I mean, normally people want to have nothing to do with the other half. So the act of coming together and saying let's mark this in some way is a healing process and a process of reconciliation, I suppose. So that does make sense, I suppose, to sort of knit that flag back together.
Yeah, to knit it back together. Yeah, it was. I was a mess. Just
so, what happened to the artwork?
I don't actually know.
So they didn't. They weren't gifted it, or it wasn't. Because I was going to say, who would keep it in the divorce
exactly,
settlement?
Who would keep it? The program actually didn't deal with it, or maybe it did. Maybe I was just crying too much to notice where it went at the end.
But I suppose that's interesting about how do we reinvent these ceremonies that have been around for so much of our lives, you know, marriage and birth and death, and how do we reinvent them to be more relevant to contemporary life?
Yeah, I think so through Grayson's various series, I think he's done 4 or 5 television programmes, he's just dissecting parts of life, which obviously art is in itself, is looking at art and culture. I find it interesting that it's via the medium of television in itself. Mm. A lot of artists, be whatever form, I've certainly been made to feel guilty as a performer for watching television. So I remember maybe 10 years ago now, a group of comedians were sat around at a party and saying, of course, I don't have a TV, I don't watch telly. And what I like about Grayson Perry is that on one of his series, he made a part about Rylan from Big Brother. Mm. An X Factor. Mm. Absolutely. When people say, do you watch Love Island? My answer is yes, I watch Love Island. I do watch Love Island. I'm not here to pretend that I'm better than it.
Yeah.
I'm actually, what I'm trying to do is write and create comedy and create music that's based on culture and based on life. And life is using Instagram. Life is tweeting pictures of your cat. Mm. Life is, you know, as well as these big subjects that Grayson deals with, the fact that they're on telly and they're covering it's just so mainstream.
Absolutely. And there is that huge dissonance between his work where he uses very traditional methods of making, so the, you know, the sculpture, the ceramics, tapestry. And then, as you say, you know, the coverings that he uses on that are very unconventional, highly contemporary, you know, the references he has to popular culture, to kitsch.
Yeah.
He does bring those together in a really exciting way. And using television is a really important medium to reaching people. I mean, I'm very interested in the idea of art being for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he's a mainstream artist on mainstream television, in people's homes, people seeing art in their lives, is incredibly important.
Yeah, I think the series that he did, I think it was called Who Are You, which was the pots and tapestries that were about a couple with Alzheimer's, with Rylan, who I mentioned, some deaf parents. He sort of built artworks based on these subjects that were chosen, and they were in the National Portrait Gallery, and it had record numbers. It's never had a bigger footfall than when these pots were on display, and entirely based on television. How do people find out about things now?
Absolutely.
And yeah, fantastic. So there are all those people that might not have ordinarily gone into the National Portrait Gallery are there to look at those works, but then they'll also see other works and discover other things. And, you know, in a time when things like museums are fighting to keep funding, it's fantastic that such a mainstream media is... It's not dumbing down these things either. It's presenting them in a really interesting, challenging way that makes us look at ourselves, but then also, ta-da, here they are for you to look at the end.
Was that a similar drive? Because I know, as well as a comedian, you're a very accomplished musician. Was that one of the drives that you had for doing the concerto for comedian and orchestra? Because, of course, that was on the Glastonbury Festival. I mean, what a great way of interacting with people.
Yeah, one of the things I've tried to do through my work at the BBC Proms and also with my sort of more contemporary classical writing was write works that felt like they were for now. I listen to a lot of contemporary classical music, and there's a bit of a snobbery involved if it sounds tuneful, actually. I think most of the best classical music writing is happening in film music, where it has to be melodic. And nowadays, contemporary classical music is deemed brilliant if it's someone banging a disused radiator and they're going meep, 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 and I think, okay, there's a place for that, but actually you go back to the beginning of the last 100 years, the really big, you know, Mahler and the really big tunes were the stuff that people wanted to hear. Mm. And nowadays that's not happening. And I wanted to write a piece of music that felt like a film score, that felt like it was soaring and a huge sort of sound, but stick on that comedy, stick on that a sort of stand-up story that goes along with the music, that feels contemporary but it's also completely different. Yeah, I wanted to sort of drag what I feel classical music is into the modern contemporary sort of realm.
And how exciting to perform at Glastonbury.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was really good. I'm doing it again in, might as well plug it, I'm doing it again in March 2019 at King's Place. And it's part of a festival of female composers because still, rather shockingly, 97.8 is the figure, 97.8% of classical music programmed in Europe is by male composers.
Goodness me, that's terrible.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of women writing. Plenty of women writing.
So we need more festivals like that.
We do.
So I wonder as well that, I wonder if your interest in Grace and Perry as well is a kind of reflection of your own career. Grace and Perry has a very strong autobiographical sense running through his work. And as a comedian, I wonder how much autobiography plays with your work. But also as a composer, I mean, that creative urge, how much are you putting of yourself into your work?
I put my whole self into my work, and especially with comedy. For instance, I've just written a new song about what I think female behaviour online is. Now, I think it's my own behaviour plus a few of my friends, and I'm taking a huge leap of faith and guessing, going, I bet lots of other women do the same thing. And as soon as you present it to an audience and you hear the laughter, you go, oh, they do. and I think that obviously, I think Grace and Perry's work is extremely similar. He's the sort of person that I feel really good that he's on Twitter, he's tweeting pictures of his cats, he's brilliant at his work, and he's not pretending that he's better than watching X Factor. And I think there's lots of people in art and culture that sort of sit on a high horse and go, I don't want to absorb myself with culture. And I think that by ignoring Love Island, by ignoring Big Brother, by ignoring the things that everybody is watching, you don't actually know society, I think. If things are really popular, if your job is to make art, make comedy, make music that you think is in response to real life, I think you have to sit there and go, yeah, I'm watching it and I like it, or I don't like it, but at least I'm taking part in it.
Mm. So do you think his next series should be about social media and about maybe Love Island itself, television?
I think it's coming. I'm can't seem to write about anything else other than what I believe Instagram is doing to women, especially in doing to their brains. I find that it must have a massive effect on self-esteem and how actually people live their lives. I think that it's there's definitely something to be said and made in terms of comedy, art, music about our relationships between our phones. Because I think people in their perhaps sort of early 20s to mid 20s, women especially, are just living life to take the pictures rather than taking pictures of their lives.
Mm.
I find it quite fascinating. Mm. And I'm certainly trying to make work that feels like it's representing now. So I can only imagine that an artist like Grace and Perry is studying the detail of very similar subjects.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, last year he had an exhibition at the Serpentine called The Most Popular Art Exhibition Ever. And a lot of the works were very Instagrammable.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much he's engaging with that in his work anyway. What other themes and rites of passage were explored in the series that you've just been watching?
Yeah, it was birth, death, marriages, all the things that we as a society have a ritual to, be them religious or not, which I think... it's interesting because you feel an ownership over a ceremony and you feel like... It's only humans that invented it, so you're perfectly able to invent new ones, which is why it was so amazing when the divorce one got invented, because you feel like, oh God, I couldn't possibly invent a ritual, invent a ceremony. But of course, ceremonies only have been invented by humans. It was very funny because after I'd watched the marriage one, there was in the one about marriage, there was lots of different types of a religion various sort of, basically, I'm getting at is that not long after I went to a humanist wedding, and I'd never been to a humanist wedding before, and I found myself looking at the ritual of it in a more interesting way, because some family members of mine had chosen to not have a religious ceremony, but to choose to have a humanist ceremony that didn't involve any mention of God, but there was still so much so much ceremony. More actually, in some ways, there was more. There was lots of gong banging and things, passing around of rings so that you warm them and you pass them from hands to hands. And it was really interesting seeing the different types of ritual, and some of them made me feel really uncomfortable. So that the gong, the man that walks seriously down the aisle, banging a gong around the couple, around their heads, down the aisle. I thought I couldn't have someone bang a gong around my head without bursting into... I just couldn't sit there and let someone do that because I don't have the personality. I don't have the personality to go, I'm going to enjoy the ritual of this, because I can't. It makes my eyes roll. It makes me go, oh, it's like going to a Catholic funeral and watching the wafting of the various things. I can't. Just for some reason it makes me laugh that humans have decided that this is a good thing to do at that moment.
I thought it was very interesting in one of the ones that I watched, which was about death.
Yeah.
And he visited a couple whose son had died and they had built a shrine to him. And he went away, Grayson Perry went away and created an artwork, a shrine, an actual little icon of the sun, and I thought how beautiful. And they took great comfort in that it was something to focus on as being this relic, as being something that had an almost magical, talismanic quality to it. So I mean, I think it's the power of art as well, because obviously they'd made this shrine themselves with the photographs and clothing and whatnot, but he'd created a work of art, and they were so touched, and it was so important to them. The importance of art. And I just wondered, what's the importance of art in your life? Do you have something in your life that you really love, or that is so special to you, that has special meaning to you?
I have lots of different things on my walls. I like to try and design, when I have to design my own posters and stuff, I try and make them as interesting as possible, which I think sometimes when you're creating a show and you're creating something to go with it, you want to almost try and create something a bit arty. So my poster for my concerto, I decided to have myself with a clown face, and something that something that feels like it's, oh, that looks interesting, which I like. I've also got a big wall of photo booth pictures, capturing moments, and they're not online, they're physical, and they're just on a notice board, and it's just lots of different moments, which I like. I like things to feel quite personal. And then there's the things that you keep. I keep lots of things, like if I filmed a TV show, I've kept the backstage pass from that. And I've got them on a notice board, or some various things like that in little frames. And then some of those things will involve former partners. And I watched a Daniel Kitson show talking about that, about the little things that you put into frames on your walls. And once that thing has passed, or that thing doesn't have the same meaning anymore, you don't quite know what to do with it. I have a picture that my former partner had commissioned for me of our dog. And we had two dogs, and I had one, and he took another dog in the breakup. But I've still got the picture that he commissioned for me of the dog that I no longer have. I couldn't put it on my wall.
No.
It's not on my wall.
So where do you have it?
Back
of your wardrobe.
Yeah, it's in a cupboard.
Yeah.
And it's a really weird thing, because it's a really nice picture. And it was given to me out of love in a time when things were different. But to have it on the wall in a house with a new partner is a really odd thing. But it's still a piece of art that has meaning, and I'm not going to bin it, and I'm not going to give it away. But so my relationship with that piece of art is
troubled.
it's troubled, and I don't know why. I just can't have it on my wall because I don't want to think about it. Because I like things to have meaning. I have very few pieces of either photographs or whatever in my house that are meaningless. I hate things that you just buy. I can't abide all that sort of home is love things that you'll get from IKEA or whatever. I'm sure people can make their houses look marvellous like that, but I can't have just meaningless stuff. Phrases, things. So, everything feels like it's got a point.
Lovely. Thanks so much for coming in, Vicky.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Today, we were talking about the contemporary artist Grayson Perry, who was born in 1960. Perry is best known for his ceramic vases, tapestries and his cross-dressing alter ego Claire. He won the Turner Prize in 2003 and has had many national and international solo exhibitions, including at the Serpentine Gallery, the British Museum and the Barbican Centre. As a broadcaster, Perry has presented a large number of documentaries for Channel 4, exploring topics as diverse as identity, taste, masculinity and Brexit. Grayson Perry was elected as a Royal Academician in 2011, and in 2018, Perry co-curated the Royal Academy of Arts' 250th summer exhibition. Reflecting Perry's work and interests, the exhibition was colourful, and many of the artworks had a political and provocative tone. If you would like to carry on the conversation further, you can find me on Twitter, at Laura Jane Foley. And if you want to discuss the show, please use the hashtag #MyFavouriteWorkOfArt. The show was recorded at Wisebudder in London. The title music is Blue from Colours by Dimitri Scarlato. I hope you'll be able to join me next time. Goodbye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.